Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. We'll have SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey coming up at 7.30 today on the show, so looking forward to that. Teron Davenport coming up at 8 o'clock. But as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Jared Stillman, a couple of days removed from his big victory in Jared versus Joe. Jared, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I thought it was a very poor performance by Joe on Wednesday. I felt as if Joe, kind of dug himself a hole that he couldn't get out of, talking about how he was flip-flopping on something, and there was no flip-flop to be had there. So tough loss for Joe, but excited to get back in the ring on Wednesday.
Yeah, looking forward to that coming up on Wednesday. Go ahead, Joe.
You flip-flop all the time. You're doing most of a flip-flop on Stackhouse. I'm sure once they get to the NCAA tournament, you'll completely, contradict yourself and what you said for years about Jerry Stackhouse. Don't worry. It's coming.
Well, they're going to need to win tonight before we can start talking about that. And so, if they win tonight, they make the tournament. And then he will have matched Kevin Stallings for having made the tournament once in the first 4 years. Kevin Stallings made the Sweet 16 once in the first 4 years. And, Robbie, I know Joe wasn't here at the time when Stallings was the coach, but I was not the biggest Kevin Stallings fan in the world.
You were not.
So we're going to have to, do a little bit better than Kevin Stallings' big picture.
Looking forward to that. So, Jared, you brought up something very interesting yesterday that I thought about
every day.
But I thought about this when some reports came out earlier this week that some NFL general managers expect Jalen Carter to fall out of the top 10. And you brought up McShay's mock draft yesterday that has Jalen Carter available outside of the top 10 based on things that have happened. Now, number one, I don't know that I'm convinced that Jalen Carter is going to fall out of the top 10. I think there could be a lot of smoke going on there and maybe not much fire. But let's play that situation out and say that he falls outside of the top 10 and that he's available to be selected by the Titans. Number one, how much would you consider doing that if you're the Titans? And number two, if you did, what do you think that means for Jeffrey Simmons?
Well, I mean, I said that if it was there, like if it was between Paris Johnson and Jalen Carter, we talked about it. We put 10 minutes on the clock and we talked through it all. And, ultimately we decided to draft Jalen Carter. I mean, I don't know that it means really anything for Jeffrey Simmons, right? Like, it's not like the San Antonio Spurs drafted Tim Duncan and it was like, well, we better get rid of David Robinson. The idea of putting Carter next to Simmons, I think, would be very intriguing. I would be very excited about the idea of putting Carter next to Simmons. So, to me, I don't think that would mean much for Simmons, because by the time that Carter would need a new contract, if he's as good as Simmons, most likely Simmons would probably be on the back end. Simmons, by the time Carter would need a new contract, would probably be where Jarrell Casey was when Simmons was drafted. So, I don't think that would be as much of an issue as, is Carter, and again, I don't know anything about this kid other than what's been reported, but this is where the real homework has to come in, is he a bad kid or is he a kid that did a dumb thing? And it's not, again, he wasn't the only one doing a dumb thing, but two people got killed because of it. So it's, that's the research the Titans would have to do.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's tragic. And there's always the possibility of new information. But I think you hit it there, Robbie. It's stupid kids doing something and then it went wrong and it's tragic. The idea that a single GM in this league is going to be like, ooh, character concerns because of that, I think that's complete fantasy. Now, again, if there's new information, or this is part of a pattern or something like that, this is not information that I've seen or heard. So you got to do your due diligence. But I think this is a classic example of misinformation and BS, basically, that flies around during this time of year. He's not going to be there at 11.
Probably right. Like, I think Jalen Carter's probably gone by like the 8th or 9th pick. But I think you have to be prepared for all situations. And so in the Todd McShay mock, he's got Jalen Carter going off the board at 12. The Titans take Paris Johnson at 11. And I was just thinking, okay, if the Titans are in that spot, do you take the tackle? Because they'll need a tackle. Do you take the left tackle? Or do you take the player that many say has the most talent of anybody in the draft. And to me, I ended up taking the player who had the most talent in the draft.
Jared, how active do you expect the Titans to be next week in free agency? And if they're not active, what does that signal to you about how they view this team and this roster as currently constructed?
So today will be the official Stillman and Company free agency preview special where it's the one day of the year. Joe, you'll love this. It's the one day of the year where we pretend that the salary cap matters. And I'm trying to work out, I did it all last night. And honestly, they're screwed. They are just from a money standpoint, like not so much. I mean, the cap is a mess, but there's almost no way.
Yeah. How do you know they're money? have to go by the cap. You have to make the cap.
Right. But I also have to keep in mind that last year they had a $217 million budget. And so I have to work around that. I had to factor in $24 million in first year cash on a contract that I had to set aside for Jeffrey Simmons. So there's certain things like that. It would actually lower the cap number for me to give Jeffrey Simmons $24 million this year on a new deal, but I'm not signing him to that new deal today, but I still have to hold that $24 million aside. The thing I will tell you is this. I think that if you're the Titans, you have to make a bunch of decisions ahead of time. For me, it is that I am committed to one more year of Henry and Tannehill, but I'm not committed to anything more than that. So I'm not messing with their contracts. I'm not giving either an extension, and I'm not pushing their money down. I want to be able to be done with Henry and Tannehill at the end of the year if Henry and Tannehill are not good anymore or if they're not, able to carry my team. So, to answer your question, how active do I expect them to be? I expect them to be kind of bargain shopping, and it's going to be guys that, really aren't that. They may be able to sign, one decent player, like a Cam Sutton at corner or – it's a lot of Kelvin Beachums and just Scarbinis that are out there that can fill your spots on your roster. So it'll be a tough free agency, I think, for the Titans. The one thing it will give them, though, is the ability to draft whatever is the best player available with the 11th pick.
All right, what's your receiving core next year, Jared? What's your realistic – how does this – top five receivers for the Titans next season, right now, as you see it?
Top five receivers. I think they're going to have to, one, Treylon Burks is going to have to be the number one receiver. I just don't think there's any way this team can be successful if he does not ascend to become more consistent and also have the big playability that we have seen from him. So that's number one. Number two is I think they need to target a receiver in either the first or second round. Now, I think they have to draft an offensive lineman in the first or second round or a receiver in the first and second round, but it's going to be tough because I'm still a big believer in best players available, but they're going to need a receiver there. I think they're going to have to sign a one-year, $2 million contract with a guy who's available on the second week of free agency. And a guy who is looking for money might either be older or might have a limited skill set, like a Marvin Jones, if nobody wants to make a run at him, that kind of player that basically gives you the Robert Woods production without the Robert Woods $16 million salary. I would make an offer to Westbrook Akine to bring him back, but I would not tender him at $2.6 million with the right of first refusal as an RFA. So that's a spot that they would probably have to fill too, and they have to hope that Phillips returns from injury and can be their slot receiver.
Jared, last thing for you. How does this Lamar Jackson situation with the Ravens play out, do you think?
Boy, that's a really good question because I don't know. They use Le'Veon Bell, for example. I remember years ago, walking in the studio and Max Kellerman was arguing on First Take about, why Le'Veon Bell was doing what he was doing. And I got frustrated because I thought to myself, well, the reason why Le'Veon Bell's doing what he's doing is because he doesn't understand this. He doesn't understand the situation. He just doesn't get it. And with Lamar, I don't know if Lamar doesn't get it or not. Ultimately, I think Lamar is not going to find a deal to his liking. And if he does find a deal to his liking that's not a fully guaranteed contract, the Ravens will match it. And I don't think that deal is going to be out there. So he'll be on the franchise tag, but will he play on the franchise tag, or will he say, like, no, you know, I want a deal or I'm not playing, and I'll show up week 10 and I'll hold in and everything else. I think it's the ultimate wild card. And I do think the reason why the Ravens gave him the non-exclusive franchise tag is to kind of like allow Lamar to investigate his own market and, or really kind of make it easier on the Ravens instead of them trying to figure out what he wants. They can just let him go to another team, negotiate a deal, and just match it and be done with all the back and forth.
Jared Stillman with us here on Robbie and Rex Row. Joins us every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. Jared, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
All right, Jared Stillman with us on the program. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll have SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey coming up at 7:30. Looking forward to that conversation with him. We'll take your thoughts, your reaction to what Jared had to say there, and look ahead to free agency coming up in the NFL next week. That's all next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Make sure you check out Nashville's best deal this week from Seafood Sensation. Often imitated but never duplicated, it's Nashville's original seafood restaurant. While supplies last, grab half off a $25 gift card to the Seafood Sensation located at 2209 Murfreesboro Pike in Antioch and enjoy some of your favorite seafood dishes like their crab legs platter, grilled salmon, and more. You can check it out at thegamenashville.com/deals. This gift card only good for their Antioch location. Thanks to Jared Stillman for being with us in the last segment. Joe, there is some smoke being put out there, and we saw this reported earlier this week. Some NFL general managers apparently expect that Jalen Carter could fall outside of the top 10. We brought up McShay's mock draft where he's got Jalen Carter going number 12 overall. I find that really hard to believe that Jalen Carter, who many people have as the best overall player in the draft, is going to fall outside of the top 10. I understand what's going on, and as you laid out, it's a very tragic situation that has happened, but I would be very surprised if Jalen Carter falls outside of the top 10.
Yeah, unless, like I said, unless there's something else to this.
Right.
I hate talking about it this way because I don't want it to come off as minimizing the situation. The situation is awful. And honestly, I've said this before too, but I'll say it again. If I'm someone thinking of drafting Jalen Carter, I'm also really concerned, like, what's the effect on him?
Sure.
You know, there's people who are close to him who lost their lives. But everything that is known at this point about the situation, I think there's a 0.0% chance. I know that different GMs have different bars, you know, as some are like, anything at all, you know, then I'm just going to just back away because it could mean more. But I'll stick with that. 0.0% chance that any GM in this league, because of this situation, is going to say, well, I was going to take him, but now I'm not. I just don't buy it at all. Again, this absolutely means that you do your due diligence and you're trying to find out as much as you can. And Tennessee Titans know about, you know, that they could go back in time. I mean, they did all the interviews and talked to all the people, but maybe they could have found out more, you know, to warn them about Isaiah Wilson. But unless something else comes of this, he's going to go. I think he's going to go like top five or six.
Yeah. I mean, he's, like I said, I mean, depending on who you ask, he's maybe the best player in the draft. I mean, some people say that's Bryce Young. Some people say that's Will Anderson. Some people say it's Jalen Carter. Like, it just depends on who you ask, but certainly
it's Bryce Young.
Well, could be Bryce Young. We'll see what happens on that front. Joe, an interesting point brought up by TD yesterday, and I'm looking forward to asking him about this at 8 o'clock. He was on Stillman & Company yesterday for the TD Power Hour, And one thing he brought up was that the Titans did meet with and seemed to be intrigued by Bijan Robinson. Now, Bijan Robinson out of Texas at the running back position is really, really good. I mean, he's a complete back. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He runs the ball really well. A lot of people think he can be a great running back in the NFL. And we've heard the rumors out there of Derrick Henry being shopped and what does being shopped mean and could the Titans really trade Derrick Henry? What does it all look like with Rand Carthon coming in? And, you know, I would be surprised if Robinson doesn't go in the first round at some point. Now, it may be later in the first round because of the position that he plays, but I would be surprised if it's not in the first round at some point. So I don't think it's very likely at all that that's the route the Titans go. They've got way too many other issues than to be worrying about drafting a running back. But I guess, Joe, if you absolutely love the guy and you feel like he could be your running back for the next 7, 8, 9 years, do you consider that if you're the Tennessee Titans?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, drafting him goes along with moving Henry,
yeah.
I suppose. But, I, like, imagine with all the other needs, like, I like Bijan Robinson a lot. And, like you said, he's a first-round back. I think he's a dynamic player. But imagine, like, I understand, like, you open up more room to be able to do something else. But what kind of team are you talking about? If that were the way you were to go, which is move Henry, draft Bijan Robinson, and then all the other needs are there. I mean, that's the thing about running back is he's the best. He's a first rounder, and he could be special. But at that position, you can get productive, good players, you know, in the fourth round.
Yeah.
And that's more what – now, they have another – by the way, they have another – so someone reported, you know, the Titans are going to the, you know, like Texas Pro Day. Roshon Johnson. I believe they have another running back who is draftable, I believe, which is just typical of Texas. So, you know, so it could be more interest in him potentially, you know, at some point later in the draft. Would you still do that with Henry, with having drafted, and I know it's a different GM, but having drafted Hassan Haskins a year ago, some people really do like Roshon Johnson as well. Poor guy, senior, just has to be on the same roster as Bijan Robinson.
Sorry, kid.
Like Matt Castle at USC.
Yeah.
And he ran a 4.5. Yeah. He's 6 foot 220.
I'm not going to totally discount it. I mean, you know, TD got on there and said yesterday, wouldn't be surprised if at some point they drafted a running back. I just, with 6 draft picks, and by the way, they did not receive any compensatory picks for 2023. So 6 draft picks. They don't have a fourth rounder because they sent that off to Atlanta in the Julio Jones part of this deal. Like, what does your priority look like? You've got so much to fix, and we're going to find out some of that next week as free agency begins, but I'm kind of with you and Jared. Like, I don't expect the Titans to be big spenders and make a ton of big moves next week. So with only 6 draft picks, like, do you really want to burn one of those on a running back when you have so many other needs? I think maybe the easiest way to go is if you're keeping Henry, bring him back and then try to get Dontrell Hilliard back in the fold.
Yeah. And, like, you know, you get later in the draft and best available type
sure.
thing. I mean, you know, you could make the case, and that would definitely rule out. I mean, we'll know by then, of course, but especially if they do re-sign Hilliard, you know,
yeah,
then I can't imagine that you would do that. I mean, you got Chestnut and Haskins as guys, but Haskins, that's a pretty significant investment, even though it was the last guy. That's still, like, that's significant draft capital put into someone who hasn't had a ton of a look yet. That would definitely, if they do take a back at any point, that's probably not a great comment on Haskins or what they think about him.
Probably not. Maddie on the text line says, if Robinson is truly a complete back, that helps the receiving core, which is a position of need as well. This is from Maddie on the text line. I get what you're saying, but it's – I think we got to get out of the mindset of the running back being the receiving option that helps the wide receiver. Like, they need actual wide receivers. to help the wide receiver right. core.
Yeah, I mean, you can – like the Niners put McCaffrey in the slot,
sure.
and he kind of looks like a slot receiver sometimes, but that's kind of an extreme example, both scheme and player. Yeah, again, Dontrell Hilliard's good receiver on the backfield. It didn't help the Titans on the outside last year. You know, they still struggled. So, yeah, I think you're right. You have to separate those two. You know, another thing, like, I think the Titans really should – consider drafting a tight end in this draft. That's one position. That's probably the most celebrated position group in this draft, loaded and deep. And just separate the Jeff Swaim hate out, okay? But they need another one. I don't know if they're going to try to bring back Austin Hooper, but they need another young tight end. And to have, if they had a good one to go with Chig moving forward, then you're set there basically if you make a good choice.
Well, and the tight end part of this draft is supposedly really deep. So that could be an option you go with if you're the Titans there. I just, you know, you need Chig to be, like TD said it yesterday, and I agree. Like Chig needs to be your starting tight end. He needs to develop enough over the offseason where you're comfortable having him out there run when you're running the football. And you're comfortable having him out there way more often and in way more situations than you did a year ago. He's too valuable, and there's too much he can do with the ball in his hands to where he can't be limited by you not trusting him in the run game next year. Like, he needs to be out there a lot. And that's some of that's on him. So, I mean, we could talk about that being on Todd Downing and the coaching staff and all these other things last year. Some of that's got to be on him to get in that position next year as well. So we'll see how he responds to that coming up. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. We'll get his thoughts on the SEC tournament in town. Lots to get into with the commissioner coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. As we've discussed in the show so far, a big day coming up in the SEC tournament. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. Greg, good morning. Thanks for calling in. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for the opportunity to visit.
Well, appreciate you taking time to be with us. Greg, obviously, you guys are no stranger to our city here in Nashville, and this has been an event that has been wildly popular and successful for a long time. Just from your viewpoint, what has this week been like for you and the SEC so far, and how would you describe the SEC's relationship with our city and Bridgestone Arena here in Nashville?
Well, the full week's busy, so it actually begins in Greenville as we crown a champion for our women's tournament, and then it's home to Unpack and Repack. We're up here on Tuesday. There's actually a lot that takes place around our tournament that's unseen, meetings of different groups, development directors from our campuses, our chief financial officers, our presidents and chancellors. We actually have a network meeting that I'll spend time on this morning with our colleagues from ESPN. And then the games, you know, just incredibly competitive games. We started yesterday with an overtime, but we've had, I think, all but one game essentially be one possession throughout the ending moments of the competition. And our basketball's in a really healthy place from a competitive standpoint. The opportunity to have what I think really are nine teams still under consideration for NCAA tournament opportunities is a lot of progress from when we were here back in 2016.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, Greg. Obviously, this league is, you're talking elite football, women's basketball, baseball, you know, gymnastics, but men's basketball, you mentioned in 2016, I think it was two straight years of three bids, and I know you guys made a lot of changes, investment, emphasis on different things. What's been the biggest key, and just how would you characterize this league in men's basketball relative to the other top leagues in America?
Going back, the key to me is the commitment to from our campuses to support programs that perform at the level of expectation we have for all of our sports. And I think if you compare us across the country right now, we're toe-to-toe or shoulder-to-shoulder, whatever whatever body part one wants to pick with any other league. We were not victorious in the Big 12 challenge that we have, the final year of that event. But if you actually look at how our teams have played over the last 30 to 45 days since that event, we've seen some teams mature. We didn't have A&M in that particular event because of the way we schedule well in advance. And that leads to the excitement in the weeks ahead. The opportunity to have a high number of teams selected to the NCAA tournament, but it's not just about selection, it's about performance of those teams once they're involved. And we have coaches, we have committed campuses, we built facilities, we have support staffs. I think we really have been talking since 2016 about the right sort of elements around men's basketball, beyond just kind of the nitty-gritty of RPI or net rankings, but how do we support programs of excellence and achievement.
Well, Greg, and to that point, you bring up the coaches in this conference, just the talent of coaches that is now with the men's basketball programs in your league. I think it stacks up to any other conference around the country. How big of an impact is the coaching talent that is now in this league and the progress we've seen there?
In my view, it's enormous because that's a 365-day connection to leadership. And that's about vision. It's about the ability to attract people into your program, whether they're assistant coaches, operation directors, support staff and player development, strength and conditioning coaches, and obviously the participants, the competitors, the players. It's also an individual position that brings the community in through the relationships, and we've seen that with coaches. I look back to last year, and we had a tremendous amount of transition, and you've seen programs that have generally had to retool, so you never know what to expect. But to see what Dennis Gates has done at Missouri and Chris Jans at Mississippi State right now, with the opportunity to play into the tournament. But to even go more broadly, I think each of those new coaches has brought a fresh energy and spirit and approach to programs. And while some may not have had the competitive success, I think you're seeing the foundation laid for those programs to build. And that's added to the people that have long histories of success in coaching. You look at Cal up at Kentucky, Rick Barnes at Tennessee, see Jerry's program maturing at Vanderbilt, what Eric's done over his time at Arkansas. You know, Buzz, is co-coach of the year along with Jerry, has this pedigree that goes way back to community college where he was a manager. But he and I intersected at Texas Arlington when I was commissioner of that conference, led Marquette, led Virginia Tech. And now having success in A&M. And you just kind of keep going through each of the coaches, Bruce down at Auburn in a Final Four run. I think that just adds to the excitement. Those people and personalities on the sideline are a part of the special feel of college basketball.
Greg, just wondering what the feedback you get, because obviously primarily this tournament has been in Nashville, last year in Tampa, but the feedback on this tournament being here, you know, from coaches and ADs and teams, and beyond this deal, do you envision this being long-term that primarily it will be in Nashville?
The feedback's been continually positive, and we always try to tweak and improve and learn from year to year. We made a commitment here way, way back in the early 2000s for the first time to have a tournament here, and to watch the city grow, become one of the most dynamic metropolitan areas in the country, to have our basketball tournament embedded in the heart of Music City is special. And what's really helpful to us is you can watch teams succeed or maybe not meet expectations, and then another team succeeds. The location and the accessibility of Nashville is a benefit to our fan base where, hey, look, we're playing well. Let's get up there for the weekend. We also know that people plan to be here. They plan their year around this particular event. We're appreciative of the Predators. Sean Henry's leadership as president has been an important part of making it work within the building. And what's really interesting to think about the history of the building, to have kind of that rehearsal hall in the back, which would be an odd thing to just put on a sports arena, but it is an incredible benefit for us as we have a high volume of media participating and attending and press conferences, hotel situation, dinner, entertainment. I'm watching some of my colleagues put out press releases about what they're doing around their tournament. And I've told our PR staff, we should just put out a press release that says in really big, bold print, Nashville. that's what adds to the excitement. So, yeah, we're going to be here. We've got the opportunity right now to be here annually through 2030, with then an opportunity to extend again for 5 years. And I really look forward to our future here. I think we have the opportunity to establish something incredibly special.
SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey with us here on Robbie and Rexroad. So, Greg, how much of your time has been occupied of late about the football scheduling that's coming up? We know Texas and Oklahoma joining the league in 2024. How much of the trying to determine what the scheduling is going to look like football-wise has occupied your time of late?
It does. I've got a great staff working on that, so probably not as much in some of the minutia. I'm hearing the output of the minutia. But recall, we made the decision to extend invitations back in July of 21, and in August of 21, we began the effort to understand the needs, but also the wants and the priorities around how we will schedule each of our sports. So there are 21 of those to figure out, but football will dominate the level of interest. The foundation's laid, and I said last year in Destin that we were poised to make a decision. And then what happened is we took a step back as a group and said, you know what, there's a lot of change that we can see coming over the next 3 to 4 months. And last summer we were thinking about the CFP trying to figure out direction on its format, not determining its format, but direction. Watching what was happening around with some media decisions that conferences had to make, notably the Big Ten. We also wanted to dig much deeper into some of the analytics around tiebreakers if we move to a single division. And the focus really became, let's have our teams move through our campuses with much greater frequency than we do right now. You know, these cross-divisional opponents might only make a trip to the other side for an away game once every 12 years. And that's a long time for our fans to experience the excitement of some of our teams. And so we've moved through a lot of that conversation. We've actually learned more in the last, 9 or 10 months than we thought last May in Destin we'd learn, with conference expansion, the CFP expansion being finalized. So we're working through kind of the final aspects. We'll have to come to a decision between now and our Destin meeting at the end of May, and it will occupy more and more of my time as we go forward to that point.
Is it accurate, Greg, to say that, you know, ESPN revenue increase going to 9 is a huge key of that decision? And also, do you have a list? Like, do you know the list right now? Do you have a working list somewhere, like in your pocket or in your computer, like these are the 3 if we go to 9, or, you know, is that fluid?
There's a lot of fluidity to everything, and the pieces to the puzzle aren't attached to just one element. I think there's a lot of commentary about TV's control or influence. You know, really going back to the expansion itself, that was about Texas and Oklahoma wanting to affiliate with the Southeastern Conference, and that television conversation was in the background. I'm someone who never thinks in life that money leads. I think it follows really good decision making. And so our focus is on kind of the competitive aspect of what we do. We obviously have an interest in what our broadcast partner will do, because the year we expand, 24, is a year of enormous change. We'll go to 16. The Big Ten will go to 16. We'll move all of our TV inventory to the Disney, ABC, ESPN platforms. The CFP will expand. Those are really important data points for us. And We have a number of models. I'll make that observation. Number of models. We've developed over 40 plus different ways to look at football scheduling. Those have been narrowed. A lot of speculation about three games. If we have a 9-game schedule, who are teams' three primary opponents? That's an overread of the situation. Every one of our schedules will be either 8 or 9 games. And the only correct analysis is to look at the full season schedule, not 1/3 of a season's schedule, if it was 9 games. We also know that, you know, history and rivalries are really important in this league. And one of the really, I think, meaningful aspects of our expansion is, unlike most every other conference expansion of which I'm familiar, this one brings back rivalries. And so the ability for Oklahoma and Missouri, who were Big Eight members for decades, to play each other, obviously Texas and Texas A&M, the Arkansas-Texas rivalry, we're uniquely positioned to honor those rivalries. And that's a big part of our decision-making as we go forward. How do we include those special games, Florida and Georgia, in there, the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl, some of the real special things that define the SEC.
Well, Greg, we really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Enjoy the weekend here in Nashville, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day. Look forward to some basketball later today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it as well. Right. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on our text line, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 1025 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! We were incredibly outmanned at the end. Had 3-4 guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining us.
Oh, an interview that will never get old. Bruce Pearl a couple of weeks ago losing his mind against Alabama. Maybe we'll see something like that happen at some point this weekend from somebody else. Who knows?
I was going to say, it's not going to be from him. Yeah. You know, when Auburn goes down to Arkansas. I did see Bruce Pearl, you know, having a nice chat with Jimmy Hyams, though.
Oh,
yesterday. So he did get a little catch up with Jimmy Hyams.
That's good.
In Bridgestone before going out and losing. But yeah, now Musselman is actually a top candidate for a moment like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
One of them was going to advance. It's kind of tough that they would play each other this early because, you know, we need those two personalities.
Yes, we do.
Yes. So I am going to rant about basketball. It's funny because earlier in the show, Best Words of Sports, I said there's nothing bad because it's this time of year, so everything is beautiful in the world. But I will say, and this happened on Twitter yesterday, and I know a lot of these rants stem from that, and it just brought up another one. I've told you about a pet peeve of mine, which is, you know, how does this team, they finished fourth in whatever league. They went 10-8 in whatever league. How are they in over a team that went 9-9 or finished seventh or blah, blah, blah? Like, it means nothing. Football has jacked everything up to the point where these leagues are so big, one team's league schedule could be completely different from another. It means nothing. Unless you get to a point where all these teams and all these leagues play everybody twice, and we will never see that again. But I got another one. And it came up yesterday, and this is the time of year for this. And people say it every year, and they'll point to things. And in this case, Texas A&M last year was pointed to in my little Twitter fight. The conference, don't you guys realize that the conference tournaments don't mean anything? So, first of all, I mean, I've talked about this before too, but in 2015 – I don't know if they still do this, but David Warlock, I mentioned him. He runs the selection committee. Every year they were doing this for several years, having inviting some media to come in and just basically serve, like act as the committee, okay? So we spent like 2 days in the room, and it was all this like fake stuff, like, okay, this team just did this, okay? And the entire thing was like, oh, in the conference tournament here, this happened. So, okay, let's talk about this team. Here's a score from this conference tournament. Let's talk about this team. Like, that was at least half what we talked about. The conference tournaments matter if you do anything. If you could double the good wins that you have in one conference tournament. Like, if you happen to play two high quadrant or three high quadrant one teams and you beat them all and you had like one quadrant one win or whatever all year, you just massively change your resume.
Right.
It's about who you play and what that means to your resume. It's again, it is, if someone's like, well, gosh, if that team can get to the finals, maybe they'll get in. Or if that team get to the semi, who did they play? Like yesterday, Tennessee and Vanderbilt did nothing other than keep themselves alive for more good wins, right? I mean, so that means nothing in terms of that particular game. It just throw it into the stew and it doesn't make an impact. But if Vanderbilt beats Kentucky today, yes, the conference tournaments freaking matter. Of course they do. It's a condensed opportunity to totally change your resume. And I don't understand why people still say this crap. I understand that Texas A&M didn't get in last year, and I thought they'd probably earn their way in with what they did. Sometimes that happens. And sometimes a team does get in when we don't think they'll get in because of the conference tournament. So please, as we go through this weekend, remember, it's just about the particular game and what it means on your resume. It's not about I finished here or I won this many games. If you win four games against crap teams, then it doesn't matter. And one last thing on this, Sunday is a problem. And that is where, now I know that the committee in the past has had, they've had either or brackets. Okay. So it's like, if this happens here, if this happens there, if the bracket can fit, sometimes it can't. And the Big Ten goes all the way to the end, which is great for them in terms of television. Speaking of television, having an impact on competition. But the Big Ten has been hosed because of that before, absolutely, because they go so deep. And I think if the SEC, I would argue it'd be better for you to wrap it up on Saturday from an NCAA bracket perspective, because once you get to Sunday, like, they have to have it like pretty close to done. So from that perspective, agree. Something can happen on Sunday. Like, obviously, if someone gets an auto bid, you have to adjust the bracket, right? If a team gets in that wasn't going to get in. But a lot of times the Sunday game doesn't matter. But all these things today, tomorrow, oh, they matter big.
Well, and to that point, Joe, all the games around the country do. So even if Vanderbilt keeps winning, what if Mississippi State then goes to beat Alabama too? They're another team who's right on the cusp. So it's not only what Vanderbilt does. Because people can talk about, oh, they're scheduled, they should be in. But there's also so many other teams. Like we talked about, you know, Michigan losing and some of the teams in the Big Ten around the country who are also kind of right there. It depends on what those teams also do, because then that could also hurt Vanderbilt, even if they keep winning.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, did Greg Sankey just say fluidity? Did he use the word fluidity?
He sure did.
Yes, he did.
Yes, I love that word. I mean, fluid's a good word, but fluidity takes it to another level. There's a lot of fluidity right now.
Well, hey.
And not just on my kitchen floor for Quinn.
Hey, if you're Vanderbilt, you could just, you know, go win the whole thing, as they say in Major League. Then you don't have to worry about it.
That is right. That is right. You know what? If they win this one tonight, which I think is going to be really hard for them, I don't want to be waving the blue foam finger like Michelle will be doing later on Press Row. But
jeez.
Rex! Not true. I'm not even wearing blue, guys.
That's true.
I didn't see Matt Jones yesterday. I got to see if he's out there, lurking out there.
I did see him. He was looking for Jared.
Palms in my face. Yeah. But if they beat Kentucky, they might just win the whole damn thing.
We'll see what happens. 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the beginning of NFL free agency coming up next week. Make sure you tune in today for updates on the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament on 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Toyota. Buy at Toyota.com. Ready, set, go get your Toyota today. Toyota. Let's go places. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.